Hi, I'm Susan. I'm an addict from the Bronx, and I'm a product of H&I. H&I has always been one of my great passions of Narcotics Anonymous, and I can honestly say this, and I've said this for years whenever I speak, I love Narcotics Anonymous. I'm, you know, passionately in love with Narcotics Anonymous. It saved my life. It gave me a life. It gave me opportunities to live beyond my wildest dreams. And without Narcotics Anonymous, I don't know if I'd be alive, but I know I would be a mess because that's what I was when I got here. And I had gotten clean during my pregnancy, very shortly before my daughter was born. It was not something I'm proud of. It was 30 days before she was born that I got here. And I was shortly after mandated to a program. It was an outpatient program. And the first thing that I found in that program, in the basement, in a dirty little room, was an H&I meeting of Narcotics Anonymous. And for the first time in so many years, I felt home, I felt accepted, I felt like I belonged, I felt part of, I didn't feel judged. I felt love, I felt hope, I felt promise. You know, the desperation was subsiding a little bit, and I was realizing that there was a way that other people had found that worked for them, that people didn't have to use it a day at a time. And that's where I got the message. I got the message in an H&I meeting. And you know, I was very impressed by this one day at a time thing, because I thought, you know, I tried to manipulate my way around everything I ever learned before. So when I was told to make 90 meetings in 90 days, I really initially thought that I could make a meeting today and skip tomorrow and then make up, you know, make two meetings the next day and like make it, you know, manipulate. And slowly but surely my ears opened, my heart opened, and I learned and I heard a lot of stuff in H&I meetings, and I was able to start making regular meetings. So when I was clean a short period of time, it maybe was 45 or 60 days, when I was told, well, if this is what saved your life, you should get involved in H&I. And I was really anxious to do that. I was very excited to do that. So I went to my first H&I committee meeting, and I was again welcomed. It was not a short meeting. It was a lot of business being taken care of. I had somebody sitting next to me kind of explaining to me what was going on, because I didn't really understand a lot at the beginning. And I went like the first month, and then I went back the second month. And you had to have at that time like 90 days to start training. And they gave me a training commitment. And like I felt so needed, like somebody needed me to do something, like I had an opportunity to bring a message of hope to someone else who maybe didn't have any other way to get the message, because there weren't many meetings back then. I got clean in 1988. There weren't very many Narcotics Anonymous meetings in the Bronx. There weren't many people involved in H&I. There was lots of facilities who began to start hearing about Narcotics Anonymous and wanted people to bring the message, but there weren't enough of us. There weren't enough people to bring the message to every facility. The choice had to be made. The choice that was made back then was made that they would bring, we would use the members of Narcotics Anonymous who were available in H&I to bring messages to facilities that people could not get out to get a meeting. So in other words, outpatient programs were low on the priority list. So the fact that there was an H&I meeting in the particular outpatient program where I heard the message was really miraculous, because most people worked during the day as people got lives, and they were only available in evenings. They could go in and do detoxes and rehabs and treatment, you know, long-term treatment facilities. But things like methadone programs and other outpatient programs, really there weren't enough people to do those commitments. So I got trained, and I would go every week, and they gave me a little manual. And I read it like back to back, and I would keep it with me. And you know, I learned that I had to follow some structure, and the structure was really important, that I had to show up every week, that I had to be on time, that I had to conduct myself as a member of Narcotics Anonymous, because I was a representative of Narcotics Anonymous to people from these facilities, that if I didn't behave myself in an appropriate manner, I was explained to me that I really shouldn't curse when I was doing an H&I commitment. It was explained to me that as I learned and as I was going to become a chairperson of my own H&I commitment, you know, my own, because I became very possessive about these commitments, that when I asked somebody to speak, I had to make sure they had a clean, clear Narcotics Anonymous message of recovery. I couldn't find someone who really was involved in another fellowship and used other lingo. It was Narcotics Anonymous lingo we had to use. It was some people who got clean and used and lived their program in Narcotics Anonymous, had a Narcotics Anonymous sponsor that I had to ask to share at these meetings. And I remember seeing somebody very early wearing a t-shirt, and it said, H&I, the hardest job you'll ever love. And I knew what that meant, because I loved being involved in H&I. So I got trained, I graduated to, you know, having my own commitments, and I remember that me and this other woman were given the commitment of bringing the message to a rehab every single Monday night. So it was a 2-year commitment at that time, and we did alternating weeks. And I got to say, for that, and we had the commitment for longer than 2 years, because it was hard to get somebody to take it over. And of course, like I said, it was my commitment. Nobody else could do it right at that point. So me and this other woman, we alternated every other week. There wasn't 1 week during the time that we had that commitment that one of us didn't come. We always showed up. We always showed up by time. We showed up during snowstorms. I would have copped during a snowstorm. There was no way, and I did cop during many snowstorms, walked to the cop spot, didn't matter. So that wasn't going to stop me from bringing the H&I commitment, because I knew that if I didn't show up, not only would these people who were there would not have a meeting, but it would reflect on, you know, who we were as a fellowship, that, you know, we show up for each other. And I learned this secret, and this is a really, really well-kept secret in Narcotics Anonymous, because I observed, I watched, I listened, and I learned that people who were involved in H&I very rarely relapsed. And if you pay attention to people who were involved, you'll see, you'll watch, you'll learn for yourself. You don't have to believe me. Because people, when you go to a facility and you see people who are in pain, emotional pain, really more emotional than anything else, because the physical pain, you know, of being, say, homeless or being in the streets or being sick or whatever, that we kind of get a little better physically as we get clean, but the emotional pain is a process. And when I was going to an inpatient facility, people were in a lot of emotional pain, and they were wearing the slippers with the happy faces on them. And when I left, they locked the door behind me, and they didn't have the option of leaving and coming back, because if they left, they couldn't get back in. And watching what people were going through, trying to get clean again, you know, reaffirmed to me that I didn't want to have to ever, a day at a time, go through the process of having to get clean again. That for me, I wanted to, and I was sharing this with someone earlier, when you hear people say, oh, I have to get back to the basics. For me, I had to stick to the basics throughout my recovery, come to meetings early, sit in the front, call my sponsor, reach out to newcomers, you know, do the step work, you know, say yes when I wanted to say no, say yes when my favorite TV show was on, or when I was tired, or when I would rather play with my daughter. And I was told, you know, that you can only keep what you have by giving it away. And that's what the H&I, those of you who don't know, H&I stands for Hospitals and Institutions. It was the most amazing commitment that I've ever had. It's really near and dear to my heart. You know, there's not, I mean, I've been accused of being a Narcotics Anonymous cheerleader, and I'll accept that title. But without people being involved in H&I, those of us who try to get clean, the sick and suffering addicts who've tried everything else and need to hear it, need to learn it from other recovering addicts, not from their counselors and not from a book and not maybe from their church. I mean, not that all that stuff isn't good, but for me, the only thing that ever worked was Narcotics Anonymous. I got clean out of desperation. I was terrified about, you know, the fact that I was about to give birth and what was going to happen. I was homeless and I didn't have any other choices. And Narcotics Anonymous, through H&I, gave me hope. And it was my responsibility as a member of Narcotics Anonymous to continue that hope and to pass it on to other people. And I know that for me, because I brought so many H&I meetings all over the Bronx, that for years I was asked to be involved in people's anniversaries. Like, women would celebrate 1 year clean, and they would tell me that they heard the message when I brought it to them. And like, I'm not saying that I'm the one who saved their lives. It's not what I'm saying. It's Narcotics Anonymous and the fact that we had an H&I community, that, you know, you can be a tool in someone's recovery. And there were people that I would see throughout this facility, throughout this commitment that I had, that would be back. They would leave, they'd come back, they would leave, they'd come back, you know, like over the years that I had the commitments. And eventually, some of them got the message, because not everyone gets it the first time. And we're not responsible for making sure, we're responsible for carrying the message, not the mess. And we're responsible for showing up and, like I said, giving a clear, clean Narcotics Anonymous message, sticking to the format, sticking to the structure, sticking to what we're supposed to be doing as far as the H&I manual, and the results are up to God. You know, the results are, you know, I'm not responsible for your results, but I mean, there's really not much I can say without just, you know, becoming repetitive. H&I is what saved my life, and I'm forever grateful. Thank you for letting me share.
At this time, to share their experience, strength, and hope, we've asked Glenda from the Westchester area speaking on area service.
Good morning, family. I'm an addict. My name is Glenda.
Hi, Glenda.
Good morning, family. First things first, I'd like to thank my higher power for another day clean and serene. My clean date is 10/26/1999. My home group is Serenity at Trinity in the Bronx. We meet on 224th between Barnes and Bronxwood at 6:30 in the basement to help each other stay clean. I'm surprised to see so many faces in a service panel meeting. You know, this is not a relationship meeting or, you know, it's not a whole, you know, it's real serene, and I'm enjoying the energy, and I want to thank you for sharing. I want to thank Westchester Area's first convention. Yay. For asking an addict like me to share on service, which is near and dear to my heart, and service keeps me clean. Service kept me coming back. I need to say that I did service when I did not have the required clean time to do so. And I would chair meetings high, and I thought it was okay. And I'm just like forever grateful, you know, because like the third tradition states, you know, the only requirement is a desire to stop using. And I had the desire, I just wasn't ready. You know, so when I surrendered in 1999, 2 days clean, I got a commitment. And I formed a relationship with the coffee pot. And I took pride in my commitment. And you could, please don't spill any sugar. Please don't put any lumps in the sugar. Please, there's designated spoons for designated cups, right? And we had the good cookies. And there were no $2 for $1 cookies. There was Oreos and chocolate Chips Ahoy's and Nutter Butters. And that gave me pride. It gave me a sense of belonging, and I needed that. And then as my clean time progressed, the sincere clean time, I started doing the secretary's commitment. I need to say there's no place like home group. And every place that I've moved, I've always made sure that I had a home group, and I learned that from my predecessors. And I've always done service in my home group. And I appreciate, and it gave me a sense of responsibility and taught me some things, taught me how to carry these behaviors of structure and responsibility and patience in my everyday life. Doing chairing taught me how to communicate. Treasury taught me how to budget. Secretary taught me how to organize. Right. Greeter taught me how to be loving and caring no matter who walks through that door. Because I was very standoffish, and if you looked a certain way, I wasn't so sure if I was going to hug you. You know, and I got better with that. Praise God. And and then I did service for Freedom 17 down in Region. That was an experience. And I'm grateful for that experience because it allowed me to know that if I can deal with recovering addicts in a business meeting of any form, I can deal with anyone anywhere else. Because personalities. Wow. And I have like 6. So, and I know everything. And if we just do it the way that Glenda says, everything will just run much smoother. And I had to learn how to be patient and learn to listen and listen and learn, because it could be 10 different people using 10 different words saying the exact same thing, and that would drive me up a wall. However, I've learned that we all have the right to be heard. I got clean in Westchester. I got clean in Peekskill. And I remember doing service for Westchester area. And I learned the importance of policy. And that policy needs to be present, and anyone has the right to see it. It is not a secret document. It is not stamped confidential. Everyone has a right to ask to see the policy at your home group, at area, what have you. And that is our structure, okay? I also learned the importance of I learned a lot doing service, because service truly keeps me clean and keeps me here and allows me to show up for myself even when I don't want to. I learned the importance of just being still, because I might miss something, and how the service structure works, and how there is orders of business, and how if something is misworded, it can cause a situation. So we need to be clear about what we say and how we say it. I'm going to read something from the group IP number 2, and it states, "Trusted servants, our second tradition tells us, for our group purpose, there's but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself, and our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. Our trusted servants, therefore, are the backbone of the group, and their regular attendance at all meetings is extremely important. One of the pitfalls which has caused many NA groups to suffer or even fold has been the election of officers who were unqualified to serve or did not have the history of recovery in our fellowship. Often NA elections have seemed to be popularity contests rather than the selection of trusted servants. The officers of a group must be chosen with great care because of the responsibilities that their officers carry and the potential effect bad officers can have on the group. The group is the most important vehicle. Just remember that. Fulfilling the commitment to serve is important. I need to say that in my first year clean, I misappropriated some funds at my home group, which at the time was Serenity in the Morning in Peekskill, New York. And I've learned that to be accountable for my actions. So before, when I'm stating my qualifications, before I am elected into that position, I allow the group, I allow the forum, I allow my peers to know that 11 years ago, I misappropriated some funds. I'm still willing to serve, and I make good coffee. So, with that being said, if you allow me to serve, I will gratefully appreciate it. And I have to be humble I have to be humble. I'd rather tell you myself than you hear from someone else. Because I can tell you, if I did it, I did it. I've done it. That's it. You know, don't embellish the truth. I'll tell you the truth. I can be honest just for today. And I'm okay with that. And I have since that incident, I have served in that group. I, however, do not handle money because I have issues. Because if I'm holding a position and I have some money and my nails need to get done, I might go get my nails done. And if you spend the money and you put it back, it's stealing.
Yeah.
That is stealing. And I had to learn that. Even if I replace it, those are not the original bills that I was given. Yeah. And it's okay. I would like to thank the Westchester Convention Committee for asking me to share here this afternoon. I was surprised to see so many beautiful faces in the service panel meeting. If you're new, please keep coming back. Do service. It helped me stay here. The only time I didn't do service was when I was battling a life-threatening illness, and I had to let go of my commitments because at that time I had to take care of me, because I had to take care of my son. And I also need to tell you that doing service has helped me and helps me to be a better mother, because if I can be patient with you, God, I can be patient with him, and he is the ultimate challenge thus far. So thank you for listening. I'm done. Enjoy your convention.
And at this time, to share their experience, strength, and hope, we've asked Johnny from the Bronx to speak on public information.
Hi, I'm John. I'm an addict.
Hey, John.
A little nervous, and I'd like to thank the committee, and congratulations for this new convention here from Westchester. And I was sitting down thinking about, when I first was introduced to the fellowship back in 85 in the Bronx area and Westchester area were one. That's just how it was. There wasn't two separate areas, it was one area. And eventually what happened was they separated, obviously. And that was probably in 86 or so. And Big Juan became the chair of Bronx area at that time, in 86. And we had our own area. And eventually, I was like many other addicts, I wanted to get involved with service because service, I was told, keeps you clean. Okay? But I paid more attention to getting involved with service and it keeping you clean than the fact that you got to watch your ego too.
Yes.
See? Mm-hmm. It could be a two-edged sword. Mm-hmm. At least for this addict it was. But I got involved and I've done multiple commitments over the years. I did H&I and I did PI, and you know, I chaired meetings and coffee and put chairs away, mopped the floors at the old Back to Life, which we had to do because we were infested with ants and so on. And a long story short, eventually over the years, as our area started to grow a little bit, they needed a new Bronx area chairperson, and in 1990, you had to have 5 years to become the area chair. And I had 5 years, and I was elected. And a long story short, what we did was we went out and we started some committees. At the time we had PI, which was public information. I think they changed it to public relations now. And we used to have CNA, which was conventions and activities, and they changed that to events and activities. Because over the years, they changed things. And we had about 9 PI flyers. That was it. The public information flyers. Now, I don't know how many there are. And there's group, you know, there's a lot of books, Illness and Recovery, the group, and so on. So when I started chairing Bronx area, we had $250 in literature. That's it for the whole Bronx area in 1990. I did 2 years as chair. I was reelected the second year. I never fulfilled the second commitment. I did about 8 months. I gave it up. But the thing was, the people that were involved with Bronx area at the time went from $250, this is a fact, and I'm not saying this to brag or anything, I'm just putting some facts out there. We went from $250 to $2,500 in 2 years in literature. That's what we had in 1992. $2,500 in literature, because we had the first Halloween party. And it drew tons of people. It was $5 a pop. It was a big success. So what happened with me was I became Bronx area chair. I was reelected to a second term. And my head became bigger than the Bronx. Okay? I got to be honest with you now. I'm going to tell you how it is. Because it was a lot of, in my mind, it was, I did this, I did this, I did this. And I started forgetting about the wheeze. Okay, the wheeze of the program, there was a lot of eyes in my mind. You understand? We also did at the time was we went to Promesa, Project Return, Samaritan House in the Bronx. None of those places had NA meetings back in 90. And myself and a few other addicts went there. We made a presentation. They had the other fellowship there, but they didn't allow us at the time. We made presentations to these places, and they allowed us to come in. We broke the wall down, and we were so happy. And for years that I known of, our fellowship was allowed to carry the message inside Promesa, Project Return, Samaritan. It was a great success for us. And we used to bring them literature, you know, from the area. And we started the starter-up kits and all that stuff for new groups. And the Bronx just started to grow, just like the fellowship. I think when I first got clean, we had like no more than 11 meetings, maybe 9 to 11 meetings in the Bronx. That was it, maximum. Today, I know you've probably got 150 meetings just in the Bronx area alone. You know, and Westchester area had a few meetings, Saturday Night Live and a few others. But like, you know, the fellowship started to grow. More and more addicts became enthusiastic with this recovery, this new way of life, which they were taught that you don't have to use no more day at a time. That this stuff really works. They took an addict like me that was hooked on methadone, that would keep his meth in the refrigerator to keep it cold. And at night I would take it out of the refrigerator, excuse me, and put it in my pillowcase, because I didn't want my wife to tap it. You understand? Because she was known for tapping my bottles. Okay? We had that type of relationship. We thought we were in love. Okay? The only thing she loved was my meth. So I would take my meth and put it in a paper bag and scotch tape the bag and put it in a pillowcase and sleep on it. And that was the only way I felt like, you know what, it's secure. It was a crazy relationship. And like I said, I thought I was in love. And I really met my love when it came to this fellowship. This fellowship became my love. But then again, I had to watch out for the ego. You understand? Because I had a big ego in the street. And when I came in and I got elected to a few positions, it was twice as big. You understand? I couldn't help myself. They said it was a program of change. I was changing. I wasn't using anymore. See, I was a bad dope fiend. I'll tell you what I used to do. I used to stick needles in my arms, then I went to my feet, and I knew this guy that stuck needles in his neck, but I didn't know how to do that. See? And he said, you know, try it. So long story short, I cop, go home, go to the bathroom, cook up, put a belt around my neck. I pull the belt tight, I get the hit. Now, I don't know if I'm falling out because the dope is good or there's no oxygen. You understand? But I realized when I looked in the mirror with the belt around my neck and the needle in my neck, I needed help. And someone says, come to this fellowship. It's a place for people like you. because I thought I was unique, I was different. I thought I was unacceptable. And when I walked in, it was you people here that told me, "We've been waiting for you." And I said, "If you hear my story, you're not going to..." They said, "We heard your story 1,000 times. You ain't any different than any other addict. We had sick behavior. We come here day to time to change our thinking. Our thinking is upside down." And I says, "It is." And they used to have the think sign upside down, right? And all that stuff. And they tell you, "You know what? You're insane." And I wanted to punch the guy that said that. I had the street image. But the longer I stay clean, the day to time, the more I realize, you know what? This guy's right. My thinking is upside down. I don't know what I'm doing. They said, "Get a sponsor. Someone to help guide you with your thinking. Someone to help guide you through the steps and the traditions. And maybe someone to break some of that ego." And that's what I started to do. I realized that, you know what? This ain't about ego. This is about just, you know what, trying to do the healthy thing in life. When I was a newcomer or new in the fellowship, it was about doing right and wrong. The longer I stayed clean, I realized it ain't about that anymore. It's about doing what's healthy and unhealthy. And I got to ask myself, if I'm about to do something to act out, is this healthy or unhealthy behavior? And now that makes more sense to me. But in the beginning, it was about right and wrong. You understand? Well, we grow in the process. The other thing I wanted to touch on a little bit was, obviously back then you couldn't go to area and say, "Listen, I want to buy steps and traditions." And they roll out the shade, give you the shade, you give them the money. We didn't have it like that. So what we would do is we'd buy a blank shade in the hardware store. We had a woman in the fellowship that did calligraphy, and she would write the 12 steps on one shade, the 12 traditions on the other shade. And we donated the groups that were opening up. And that's how we carried the message. You understand? Nowadays, you go to the area, "I need steps, I need traditions." They got more keychains than they ever had. They have everything today. But we didn't have it like that. So we made use of whatever we could. And it worked. It worked for us. And you want to know something? When those shades and when those shades were handwritten, the traditions and the steps, it meant so much to us, man. You'd like guys regarded with their lives. I'll tell you another quick story. Matter of fact, a pair of them got stolen some years back from one of the groups. They probably opened up another group of somatic, probably stole them and took them up to his group. But it's all good. It's all good. I mean, what's he going to do? Hang him out in his bedroom or something? You know? So, things have changed over the years, you know, with public information and public relations. But a lot of this stuff is still the same. We go to these facilities. We carry, like, you know, other speakers said, we try and carry a clear message, an NA message. And we make a presentation. This is what we're about. This is what we try and do. We don't charge any fees. We don't charge any attendance. We don't charge you for the literature. You understand? You ever notice all that literature stamped H&I anyway? You don't see that in regular groups. And we used to put the stamp on it. And God forbid, somehow, that literature ended up at a regular meeting. There'd be a lot of questions. And that's how it was. So for me, I had to watch my ego. Like I said, my head became so big at times that eventually I relapsed. I had this program. You understand? I did A, B, C, D, and E. And you know what? I didn't have the program. I lost it. And I used. And I came crawling back with my tail between my legs. And I knew the service I did in the Bronx and with addicts. And you know how it is. You use, you got to cut your sponsees loose and this and that. And you got to start all over again one day at a time. And let me tell you, that's kind of painful. Raising your hand and saying, "I got one day." And picking up a 30-day keychain. But you got addicts in here with a lot of love. And they tell you it's going to be okay. You understand? And they give you that little bit of a push you need at times to keep going forward. And that's what I've done. I've been in this fellowship since 1985, and it's done nothing but great things for me. It's given me nothing but love. Yeah, sometimes I clash with other addicts. Yeah, that's what we do. But that's okay, because personalities clash. But I know even if we clash, I call them up, I need A, B, or C, they're going to do it. See, we got the same story. We came in here full of pain. We share our pain. We learn to lessen it. We learn to grow a day at a time. Program's about change. You change who you are when you first come in that door. That's what this program's based on. Change and love. That's it. 12 steps, that's all it says, change. I ain't who I was when I came in. I had a lot of street. At times, my attitude, my thinking starts going there. I don't react today. That's the thing. I don't react. I'm taught to halt in my mind and not react on that type of stuff. So that's basically my public information, that I'll give you a little bit of history, public information, what I've done, and how service can be, if you allow it to be, a double-sorted edge. It could destroy you, because you could allow your ego to come into play, and you want to speak at every convention, and I got this huge head, and I spoke here, and I spoke there. For me, I love this program. The program gives me love back, and thank you.
And at this time, to share their experience, strength, and hope, we have Donald G. from Open Arms speaking on World Service.
Yes.
Hi, family. My name is Don. I'm an addict.
Hey, Don.
Never trust yourself when you're a GPS addict. Okay? I want to thank you, Westchester area. Congratulations to them on their first convention. The first one is always the best, because God's in charge. You can't do nothing wrong. The second one's going to be interesting, because that's when we think we know stuff, okay? Ever since Henry called, I've been thinking about when I was doing the World Service stuff. And I did 5 years. And I primarily worked on the World Convention Corporation. And it's a mixed bag of emotion. You know, for 5 years, you know, at my job I get five weeks vacation every year. For 5 years, all in 5 weeks went to Narcotics Anonymous. Because there were meetings, there were extra meetings, there were conference calls. World Service is addictive because you never get to see these people. Let me back up. I want to explain to you the first time I went to a World Service conference. I always said I wish I could bring one here so that people could see what it was about. Imagine this room times five, going this way and going that way. Imagine, you know, the tables, the long tables we have. Imagine three of those tables stacked together and five rows of those three stacks going across. Imagine on the left-hand side of the wall a string of like 10 booths, which are translation booths, because they're translating what's being said into different languages. And in the middle, in between each row of tables, is one microphone. Up in the front, there's a group of people who are primarily World Service support staff, meaning the executive director of NORS and those people. And then off to right is something I had never seen in the commitment, a parliamentarian. And I'm not talking about one of us. I'm talking about this is what he does. Because it gets so complicated in there with the things that go on that sometimes he's got to take a moment and straighten everything out. You know, I have a lot of experience doing conventions here. And I never forget when I went out there the first time, And they said, oh, we have a nominee from New York. And I had to go to the microphone and introduce myself. And I was looking at all these people. And as I was walking towards the mic, it felt like somebody was pulling the mic back. You know? And the walk just got longer and longer and longer. And when I got to the microphone, I said, hi, my name is Donald. And I'm from New York. Because I was so scared. I was so intimidated by what I was seeing, you know. I had never, you know, we say it's a worldwide fellowship, but one of the things I used to constantly be there in attendance for was the roll call. Because the roll call used to trip me out because they would announce places I had never heard of in my life. And somebody would say, here, and I would just look back. You would, you know, they would show home groups of different areas all over the world. And this one home group, I never forget it, this one home group that was in India, they had one basic text for the meeting. One. And it wasn't no individual. The people had got together and bought one basic text. And that book belonged to that group. Nobody took it home. Nobody did nothing. There are so many little memories, like, there's a lot of good stuff. I'm going to talk about a little bad stuff. And the bad stuff is not bad, it's just the reality of doing that kind of service. I lost contact with a lot of people I came into recovery with. Because every time they were saying, let's do something, I had to go to a meeting. And it wasn't like I was going to the Bronx to get a meeting. It was like, get on a plane, fly to California for 3 days at a time. And God willing, if it worked, if it was 3 days, then they might say, oh, we need an extra day, so put another day in front of it. Because we got to talk about X, Y, and Z. Because at that time that I was doing the world service stuff, the convention was every year. It wasn't every 2 years, it was every year. So we'd get in a board meeting and we'd work on 2.5 conventions at one time in 1 3-day setting. And I'm talking about, you know, I sometimes laugh because I say, we can't even focus now on a half hour business meeting. And I remember sitting in them boardrooms. And I'm talking about 9 o'clock in the morning to 12 o'clock at night. Because everybody came from different places, when we got together, it had to be the most efficient amount of time. And you're talking about by Saturday night, people are laying on the chairs like there. People are like this, you know, and we're still working stuff. And, you know, we're voting on money matters, and people, instead of raising their hand, they're raising their leg, you know. Because everybody is burnt out, you know. But that's what it was. And, you know, you do 4 of those or 5 of those in 1 year. And there were things like, you know, you might do that, and then they say, oh, there's a workshop in Detroit. They need somebody from World Services there. You're close enough to Detroit. Can you go to that thing for the weekend? And every time my friends would call and say, hey, we're going over here, let's do that, I'm heading to the airport. My sponsor used to say to me all the time, he said, where am I sending you now? Because, you know, he used to, like, he was joking, but it was kind of a thing, like, all this money I'm putting in the basket, you're doing a lot of traveling on the fellowship. But believe me when I tell you, it's exciting. But when you go to California, we used to go to California, we'd be in a room like this the whole weekend. It's not like we was out la-di-da sightseeing and stuff like that. We'd be in there working. And that kind of dedication, it's addictive. Because the people that are doing it, everybody's the same. Everybody loves this fellowship. They're like 100% committed to doing the right thing for the right reason. And when you get like 50 of them or 100 of them in a room, it's impressive. And you hang out with them and you get to talk to somebody. You know, when I was on the World Convention and I was chairing it, and my vice chair was from Portugal. And, you know, just sitting there, just being exposed to that, I had never thought about that before. It's something when you get to hear and they're doing the 12, you know, traditions or the steps, and they got person reads step one in Chinese, this person reads step two in some other language, and they go all the way down the thing in a whole different language, you know. There are memories I have of honesty is a bitch in this program. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's a bitch. There are so many things I remember about doing conventions, and this one guy, and it was in Paris. Up at the registration area, there should be a sign that says not responsible for lost registration packages. There should be a sign there. This guy came up to me in Paris, and he went into full dope fiend mode. I don't have the money, blah, 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 the song, this, that, blah, blah, blah. And after a while, you get tired of it. And you say, here, go and enjoy yourself, okay? The thing was, this guy came back to the next convention, which was in St. Louis, same guy, and paid me for that registration package. Because the guilt, all year, he said, all year, I was like, it just bugged me that, you know, I was cheating the fellowship. This program has given me so much, you know, because when I came in here, I had no idea what I was going to do, but I got clean at a convention. You know, I was one of them people that used to raise their hands and say, I got 60 days clean, knowing I had got high 4 days before that, you know. But I went to a Freedom 4 convention in up in Stevensville, and that's when I got clean. And that's when I saw people who weren't using but were having a good time. And then my problem came in for me personally, because after I was sitting there at the banquet enjoying myself, I looked at the people who were working and said, I wonder how them people got them jobs. That's what I called them, jobs, okay? And I found out, and I really haven't got, it took me like 15 years to get out of it. Because there's a rush of doing particularly this type of service. Because I'm going to tell you, the stories you hear at conventions are amazing. But there's nothing better than seeing that newcomer come in, his eyes all wide, because he ain't never seen nothing like this. That's what the insanity is for. And let me say this for Westchester area, for everybody doing a convention. If you go to a convention and you see something wrong or something's not right to you, don't beat up the people doing the convention. They've been working for 9 months trying to make it good for you for 3 days. If you want to do something, if you want to have that input, get on the committee, do the 9 months with them, and then you can talk. Up until, and if you're not willing to do that 9 month commitment, just say thank you to them people, because they stepped up and are doing it, you know. And I'm talking about this stuff because it's all part of what I got from World Service. Because things are going to go on this weekend that are unplanned, like me getting here by the hair on my chinny chin chin. And I can tell you about a time we was in Paris and we had a boat cruise, and it was supposed to go up the River Seine and supposed to be a speaker. And I was taking the boat out, just me. And we got everybody, got everybody on the boat, and the boat pulled out. I'm saying, okay. And I went to the guy, the Paris guy, the liaison. I said, okay, where's the speaker? Oh, we left him on the dock. Really? And he said, yeah. I said, let him cruise. No speaker. Mm-hmm. Just enjoy yourself. You know, I can say it now, but I felt real stupid at that time that I left the speaker on the dock. You have a lot of fun doing the world service stuff, and the reason, like, I'm kind of hesitating, because everything is like, I'm seeing everything that went on in my head, and it's like, looking at it, I'm like, damn, that's a lot of stuff that happened in them 5 years, you know? I remember trying to give a report at the World Service Conference, and like I described before, how the way it's laid out. And when it came time to do the report, I like blanked out, just totally blanked out, where the most basic questions, stuff that I can think about while I'm sleeping, I couldn't remember. And that's when the vice chair at the time, Portugal, the guy from Portugal, came up and just thought, well, we got to do this, and we got to do that, and we got to do that. I don't know where they get all these people. I don't know how all these people get together. But when you get in that room, it's truly a God-centered thing. It's truly a thing like, you don't want to leave. Because believe me when I tell you, by the time I got to the fourth year, I was ready to go home. Because I was tired of the meetings. I was tired of the work. I was tired of trying to do something and get to my job. I had responsibilities at my job. But my last year is when they created Narcotics Anonymous World Service. So I had to sign the papers to dissolve the convention corps. And then that weekend, they were talking about, they were taking nominees for the New World Board. And they said, Donald, you wanna be on the board? I'm telling you, I had to go in the bathroom and pray. Part of me was like, I'm going home. The other part of me, Donald, stay. And I had to think about why I wanted to stay. And why I wanted to stay with pure ego. Pure ego. Because I was going to be on the New World Board. When I went there the first time, it was because I loved what I was doing. That last time, it would have been about, look at me. And I went home. Because it ain't about, look at me. If you take any commitment and you feel like it's Big Willie time, you need to get out of that commitment. Because anybody who's done a commitment knows that when you're a chairperson or that, you know it's yours when you get in the room and everybody's arguing. And then when it comes time to that decision point, everybody looks at you. Because they're waiting for you to say, what are we going to do? This program is an inverted pyramid. That means that who's ever on the top up here is really on the bottom. Because everything flows downhill. And you're the one who's going to get shit on. Because you got to make a decision. You know, when they talk about, in my home group, when they talked about that entity out there, World Service, Narcotics Anonymous World Service, there was an issue with H&I. I don't remember what the issue was. But we talked about it at our home group. We talked about it at the area. And I'm there because I got a commitment all along the way. Talked about it at the regional level. Went out to California to the conference and heard them discuss it for 2 hours on the conference floor. The very issue that we're arguing about in Brooklyn at Free at Last on Sunday. her to come back out of the World Service Conference, back down to the region, back down to the area, and back down to my home group. So the things you talk about, when they talk about the motions, when they talk about whatever, don't think it goes in some Neverland box. It really does filter out. You know, Narcotics Anonymous has done more for me than I can ever do for it. You know, because it saved my life. And that's the way I honestly feel about it. You know, I can stand up here 24 hours. I cannot tell you how I feel about this program and what it's done for me. I don't treat it as well as I should. How do you treat something well that saved your life? You know, this is the hippest game in town. Narcotics Anonymous, you can't beat it. My name is Donald. Thank you for letting me say that.
We have some time left. Does anybody want to share? Gwen.
Hi, my name is Gwen. I'm a great recovering addict.
Hi, Gwen.
You say God is good.
All the time.
Wow. You know, I'm from New Haven.